The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. I hope you all had a great holiday weekend here in America. Coming up on today's program, what if Ian Garry cannot stop Rachmanov's takedowns at UFC 310? Plus, the calls for John Jones versus Francis Ngannou in Riyadh are growing louder, and we're getting something unprecedented going in the next few days. All of that on today's show. But let's begin with some action we saw over the weekend. PFL went down over the weekend. Did you guys watch? Did you guys see it? It wasn't like a chatter, but it was in Riyadh. It was at a little bit of a different time. And I just share with you, like, sometimes that's a hard product to watch. It is so good. It was so good. Oh, my gosh. Brett Primus, tied to Brett Primus, wanted him to win. Had a great fight. Ended up getting beat. But they had some media that come out of the backside of this. And it is cause for thought. So the story, as the PFL would like it to be told, and they were the ones telling the story, are our partners. The PFL does business in Riyadh with the same folks the UFC does business with in Riyadh. Our partners want Francis Ngannou versus John Jones. And you got you understand, this is a very good play, and there's not a lot of plays around it. You can try to dismiss it if you want. Then again, addressing it becomes kind of tough. Like, that's called fight promotion. You start addressing it, and you start addressing why you don't want John Jones and why you can't deal with John Jones. And it doesn't matter how good your arguments are or even what they are. As long as they exist, it keeps it alive, and it raises it, and it raises it, and it raises it. And that's fight promotion. The first step that any of you will see in the direction of John Jones taking on Francis Ngannou, the first step will be the UFC addressing and refusing the contest. And I love the chess play here. I don't wholly doubt that somebody has said, we would like to see John Jones versus Francis Ngannou. I don't wholly doubt that. But I don't wildly accept, because the numbers that Francis did there were not good numbers. That's just the truth. The boxing fight with Fury was one of the most amazing sporting events I've ever seen. The numbers weren't very good numbers. The numbers for Francis versus Joshua, which had a lot of excitement because now we knew how well Francis could actually do. Boy, they played to thousands of people dressed up as empty seats. And what do you want to do with him next? What do you want to do? You've got him. You got the arena. You got the money. What do you want to do with him? You want to put him back in boxing? Because he'll go. Is there somebody you'd like to see him box? Do you want him in MMA? Because you got the money and he'll go. And I'm just curious, first off, how serious those conversations actually were. That, hey, we would like to find a way. We would like to get John Jones versus Francis Ngannou. I would just personally be curious how far those went. Now, do you want John Jones versus Francis Ngannou, or can I just bring you John Jones? I mean, that might be one question that you ask. You know, I'm doing business here, they're doing business here. On one of the nights I do business, would you like me to bring John? No, that's not going to do it? All right. Well, What's the story? Why would Francis and John fight? And is the story because of the co-promotion? Because that's new. If that's new and that's strong, please, I would love to hear from you. But the idea of John and Francis fighting in and of itself wasn't big enough to make those guys agree to do it when they were both under contract and could have done it. So is it the co-promote? Is that, you'd be teaching me something, but I'd be open to learning. Is that what it is now? There's something called a Gracie Challenge. And the Gracie Challenge is very real, but it was very synonymous. As this sport grew, you could walk into a Gracie gym. Some people call them dojos. And right off the street with whatever martial arts or skills you had, you could challenge a Gracie. You could challenge Hoyce. You could challenge Henzo. You could challenge Hickson. But the way this was generally played, if they were there and they would accept the challenge, that was like just a culture of the sport. But before we do that, you're going to have to beat one of my guys. One of my students who is not yet of my level, you're going to need to beat him. And if you beat him, you can then go with me. And many times there'd be a black belt in there. And that match didn't last very long. And some days a purple was the highest that had showed up. And they would take on the purple belt and it wouldn't last very long. But we did understand the concept, didn't we? And you would also still understand if you were the Gracie. And that's what you've done your life. You've fought. You've taught other people to fight. Maybe you got a fight on the books coming up. Maybe you just had one. You would see where maybe you don't want a guy to come in off the street and challenge you. You will uphold the code because that's the way the game is played. But perhaps you don't really want to. And one of these younger guys, boy, they love it. They love to have that opportunity. They dream of doing these things. They'd love to be the one that the coach selected. You see how everybody kind of wins. And I bring that to you because if you did have the power, if you really had the power to make this fight, would you? Because if you had the power to make the fight, John Jones versus Francis Ngannou, and you're going to take it to Riyadh, just for example, then you would have the power to make Francis Ngannou versus Tom Aspinall. If you were given a magic wand that could get Jones and Francis, you would then have the power to have Francis and Aspinall. And what would happen then? And what happens if Aspinall wins? Right? And that's always the big question. Like, everybody wants to play today, and our partners want it, and we want to do this. Well, what would you do if Francis won? Do you take your chips? You go home. It was a one-time deal. That's the way we call it. It's straight down the middle. I don't have the answers to that. And I like the story. And I think Don Davis is as good with promotion and an ability to tell a story as anyone, but nobody has called him on this, which lends me to believe it's accurate. It lends me to believe that their partners would like to see that fight. And if you could make it, would you? I mean, if you make Jones and Francis, you're probably never getting John back. That is the kind of fight where Jones could then ride off into the sunset. So you're going to set fire to Jones Aspinall. I mean, you understand all the things that would come with it. But if you talk about wanting to do Francis versus Jones, the people that should be pushing back and arguing with you are your own heavyweights that you have under contract saying, hey, you're looking to go somewhere else. We're standing right here. None of which have done that. None. And it's an interesting spot. It's an interesting spot. It's a card play I wanted to see years ago when Francis was going to leave the UFC and go and box Fury. The play I wanted to see was to Dana go, okay, you want one of my guys here, you got him, and put John Jones in. I would have thought that John Jones versus Fury would have been something special, but it also would have ended that entire craziness of my knee hurts and I'm going to sit for 11 months and I'm not fighting anybody and I'm not paid enough. It would have been a vindictive and spiteful move, but it would have been done in retaliation to a vindictive and spiteful move. So would you do it? If you have the ability to do it, would you do it? Do you really want to see John and Francis, particularly if you know the winner never fights again? Right? If Francis goes and beats John, he doesn't then go, well, you know, Tom Aspinall's the next contender and sure, I'll go defend. He'll never fight again. If John beats Francis, we will never see him again. Is that the one? Is that really the one? Because I know you guys liked the fight, and I know you even wanted to see it, and I know there was even some chatter for it, but at one point, they were both under contract, and when it didn't come to fruition, you got up and you moved on. As a matter of fact, you moved right into Ciryl Gane versus John Jones in the fight capital of the world known as T-Mobile, and it was absolutely sold out. So I'm just curious. I'm just curious how you would play this. And if you did accept the fight, why do we got to do it on... Why do we got to do it on your cameras? Or why do we got to do it on your surface? Why wouldn't we do it over here? It's just discussion. It's a road that isn't going very far. But it's interesting. It was the right move by Don Davis. And by the way, I think it's an accurate move. I think they would like to see that contest. What are they willing to do to see that contest? I suppose that's what we're all wondering. Does Ian Garry have to stop Rachmaninoff's takedowns? That's a big question going into this fight. And I've heard people breaking this match down, and there's always a... You almost know who the hardcore guy is in the room because he will instantly, lazily default back to the way things used to be, which is, if you've got a striker, take him down. If the guy's a grappler, stop his takedown. That hasn't been true in well over two decades. But I do find even myself defaulting to it at times. So if we were to look at it from that perspective, because Michael Bisping weighed in, and Michael Bisping said, if Ian Garry cannot stop the takedown, he will be finished. All right, but what if he does stop the takedown? Or what if Rachmaninoff doesn't go for a takedown? And I'm only asking you, I'm asking you, and I want history to support your response. In what fight, and Rachmaninoff has had 19, in what fight did you see him get outboxed? Now, I'm just talking about outstruck, and it was with one of your hands. Okay, what fight did you see him get out kickboxed? So now those are strikes. He got the hands and they got the legs involved. At what strike? At what moment? I know there was never a fight in its totality. I know there was never even a round in its totality. Was there a sequence? Was there a moment? Rachmaninoff did a very good job of closing the distance in his very last fight. And that was roughly a year ago from time of this fight with Ian Garry. And that was against Wonderboy. And Wonderboy has as awkward and as sophisticated of a style as you're ever going to have to come across. Like, if you can get to Wonderboy, you can probably navigate your way through a buzzsaw. It's a very rare thing to do. And I just remember during that fight being very impressed because Rachmaninoff did it. But did he have to do it? Like, is there some level of urgency? Not that I saw. Was there something within the fight where those punches and or kicks were getting to him? Wonder Boy's tall glass of water. It's not quite as tall as Ian Garry. Wonder Boy's style is more complex and his power is more extreme than Ian Garry. Ian Garry's a kickboxer. He's by the numbers. Everything's with a feint. Everything's in combinations. Everything kicks. Kicks follow hands. Hands never follow kicks. I mean, just for example, he's really great at it. But he's not a power puncher. I don't doubt that Ian Garry has put somebody down, but I must tell you, I don't remember it happening. I have seen guys not be able to stand after a cumulative amount of strikes. And I'm just wondering, because I don't feel that we know Rachmaninoff that well. You want to know where a lot of this is coming from? It's not just from Bisping's comment. You want to know where a lot of the genesis of my thought right now is coming from? It's coming from Tom Aspinall. Tom said that one reason Jones didn't want to fight him is because Jones is such a student of the sport and he likes to sit down with all the guy's tapes and study him. Come up with a plan and then go in there and execute. And Tom said, he doesn't know anything about me. If he goes and watches five of my fights, he's seen less than 5 minutes of me fighting. And it's a very interesting comment. Now, how true it is within John's mind, consciously or subconsciously, I'm not all that interested in. I was interested for myself going, you know what? As a matter of fact, I have questioned Tom's wrestling at times. I've questioned Tom's ability to take somebody down or to even get up from the bottom. But the other side of it is, I haven't seen him fight enough where that actually ever got tested. I don't remember a fight where Tom went for a takedown and didn't get it. I don't remember a time when Tom was on bottom and in danger, couldn't handle himself or get back to his feet. I don't know if I've ever seen him go for a takedown. I don't know if I've ever seen him on bottom. That's my only point. So I'm asking you now, does it apply to Rakhmonov? Rakhmonov with 19 fights, but all of them finishes. We talk about he beat 19 men, but he won every single round. That's the part that gets left out. Nobody has won a round against Rakhmonov. And it makes it overly complex. So now if he hasn't lost a fight and he hasn't lost a round, I've got to break it down smaller and ask you, has there been a sequence? Has there been a combo and or a scenario that made Rakhmonov uncomfortable to where he had an urgency to change the dynamic of the sequence or scenario? Not that I know of. Not that I'm aware of, no. If he has wanted somebody down, he took them there. If he wanted to keep them there, he did. If he wanted to pass, he did. If he wanted to submit, and I'm just wondering it from that perspective, because when I do hear grappler versus striker, and it's a very lazy approach, but you're not going to get away with that in this case, because Ian Garry is not that kind of a striker. If it was a question of who is more likely, due to the power of their punch, to put the other down with one lucky shot, I got to imagine that's a 50-50. You can't just tip that on the side of Ian Garry. He's not damaged more people on his feet. He has not hurt more people on his feet. He has not finished more people on his feet. He is not a power puncher. So could Ian Garry protect himself on the ground with Rakhmonov? And so many times when that question gets asked, you automatically assume it from the standpoint of the top guy, but there's two positions on the ground. Is there a scenario? Can Ian Garry sweep him? Can he find those triangles? He started to show us some submissions to a level that we had never seen before when he fought with Michael Venom Page. And while you may tell me that Venom Page isn't this elite grappler, you don't really know how good Venom Page is at grappling. You don't see a whole lot of it. And my only point is that Garry had never shown that before, went and traded with Damian Maia for one camp, and then started breaking out, utilizing it to the point that it even won him the contest. It's just an interesting concept. It really is. Because the winner of this fight has a lot on it. The storyline going into this is awesome, and nobody's going to tell it. Rakhmonov, to my understanding, does not have the ability to speak. He mutters something, and then hopefully somebody else tells you what he said. And Ian Garry is a little bit uncomfortable speaking about Rakhmonov because they used to be teammates. So you've got the story that's never going to be told, but it does at least at a minimum appear that your winner goes on to fight Blahal for a world championship. I believe the loser of that fight, right? We had two welterweights today come out and proclaim they're on cards with no opponents. One is Leon Edwards, and the other is George Masvidal. In the idea of Ian Garry, who's the underdog here, versus Leon Edwards, an old training partner, I can live with that. But the idea of Ian Garry versus George Masvidal, that I would be quite excited about. Division, and it's been very interesting, guys, right? I mean, it's very interesting. 2 weeks ago, headlines everywhere. Absolute talk of the town. Aspinall, Jones, what I would do to fight, and I will do anything to fight. And you had, it was kind of interesting because a week goes in between, and now the only headlines that you could connect John Jones with are to Francis Ngannou. And I will admit, that was a bit of a flash in the pan, and that didn't steal the airwaves long, but it still interrupted the cycle. And now, as we come out of that phenomenon, only on the third week, you can't find Jones and Aspinall connected anywhere. There is no demand by the audience. The audience that was hot and heavy and give them what they need and find out whatever you want has passed. And now there's some eyes on Volkov and Gaughan. And I don't suggest for you Volkov and Gaughan is the same as Jones and Aspinall. What I'm suggesting for you is Volkov and Gaughan have a major say and influence on what happens with Aspinall and John. So the most telling, and one thing you will never get from the MMA media is to ask a meaningful question. It just simply will not happen. And when they didn't take the belt off of Tom, you must understand, that's not a conversation that you would need to have. Those words would never be spoken. It couldn't be any clearer within the rules that in the presence of an undisputed champion, there is no interim champion. That couldn't be clearer. And let me give you an example. And you might think, well, they're not all that close. Like, no, they're the exact same. If a guy is the world champion and he fights a challenger and he loses, the challenger is the champion. And they'll make an announcement of that. Bruce Buffer will announce that. And a belt will get put around him. There will be an announcement. There will never be an announcement that this guy is no longer champion. It doesn't need to be said. It's the way the rules are. And I only bring you that because that did not happen here. And the failure for that to execute is for a reason. And I think that that's where a lot of the fun comes in. I think a lot of the fun is trying to identify situations like the one I just did for you, but also trying to guess what that reasoning would be. And I don't think it's overly sophisticated. Within the reign of Tom as interim champion, we saw something we haven't seen before, which is an interim title be defended. And we would have every right to defend that title a second time. In fact, if we have a champion that says, I'm not going to fight, for example, that is the very thing that you would have an interim champion for. And that often gets missed by people. I've heard this in open discussions where people didn't understand. If you have a champion who is healthy, he is simply unwilling. That is the reason you would strip somebody. There isn't another reason that you would. There's other reasons that you could. You have what's known as a closet champion, or you have somebody that's got an injury, but you'd really have to search to find something like that. In fact, the only champion I can ever think of, and this is off the top of my head, but the only champion who we've ever stripped when he had an injury, and Dominic Cruz, it was 3.5 years just by example. His knee just kept hurting, but they kept the belt on him. You show a guy grace, right? When a guy is down, you help him up. The only champion I can think of that we ever stripped due to injury was Jiří Prochazka, but the belief on that injury was that it was career ending. It was a little bit of a different situation. So if you can't get your healthy champion, he just simply isn't willing. But you are unwilling back to take the belt off him. Okay, fine. Just you keep it. Whatever that is, we'll deal with it because there's a lot of uniques going on there anyway. But we can still get on with it. We got a heavyweight champion right over here. It's the interim heavyweight champion. And an interim heavyweight championship is going to be very sought after and very interesting after Ciryl Gane and Volkov. Ciryl Gane and Aspinall just works. It works. It works to the point that it could have been done 2 years ago. It works to the point that it was attempted to have been done at Madison Square Garden of last year. Tom Aspinall has every right to not give it to Ciryl. What Ciryl did to Tom Aspinall was terrible. And now Tom's got some power and Ciryl like it back and Tom's giving him a swap. But that doesn't last forever, right? I mean, at some point it's equitable. You get even. Now let's go out and do the fight. And Ciryl is a very heavy favorite. I, for the life of me, do not know why. And by the way, I find myself when I speak about Surreal, it's generally not positive. Surreal is a handsome guy. He's a very tough guy. Surreal's got a fine life. I don't mean to be negative towards Surreal, but I will share with you, nobody gets better at this sport by not doing it. And Surreal passed up on very big opportunities to go and film a movie that nobody's ever heard of and most likely will never see. But you can't ever get around that. Every actor wants to be an athlete, and every athlete wants to be an actor. There's no way to ever work that out. So now Surreal's going to come in against largely a mirror image of himself, right? Surreal does all of his finest work with the kickboxing. Volkov does his finest work with the kickboxing. And I don't completely know how good Volkov is. I just know he's really good, but I don't completely know how good. I mean, he looked his best in his last fight. He's fighting Sergey Pavlich, who you guys anointed the next great thing. I think largely because he was Russian and had blonde hair and you saw Rocky IV. Truly, I really do believe without Rocky IV, you never anointed Sergey Pavlich, but you did. And Volkov went out and didn't even take him serious. Volkov's trainer, in between rounds, brought him water and a comb. He combed his hair in between rounds. I mean, he was doing marketing. He was doing marketing, and he was doing a spoof, and he was performing. Because he was so unimpressed by your great blonde hope, who he eventually put down. And I'm just sharing with you, the idea of dealing with Volkov on your feet is a pretty tough proposition. The idea of dealing with Surreal Gone on the feet is a pretty tough proposition. But the idea of dealing with a motivated and forward-moving Volkov, which is what you have, versus a Surreal who, when given an opportunity, went and did anything else. I mean, that's just what happened. And Surreal is a 3.25 favorite. Another reason I feel like I can give him a hard time and I don't have to apologize, right? People like him. You guys like him. You even believe in him. But I'm just sharing with you, that's a big stretch. It's a very big stretch. But if Surreal does come out of that fight, it draws you right into Aspinall, which has been 2 years in the making. If Volkov comes out of that fight, we'd have to wait and see what kind of steam that could have behind it. But if you're John Jones, right, you're Team Jones, and you want to keep all the focus and right here on you and Aspinall, it would behoove you if Volkov won. And if Gon wins, while nobody wants to see Gon and Jones, and I can assure you, as sure as night follows day, that fight will never be booked again. People do want to see Aspinall versus Gon. And that's what makes Gon versus Volkov this weekend so meaningful.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Asakura versus Pantoja for the World Championship. Does that sound right to you? Asakura versus Pantoja in a sold-out T-Mobile Arena. Does that sound right to you? The year-ending card, Asakura versus Pantoja in the main event for the World Championship on pay-per-view. Does that sound right to you? I gotta tell you. If you know Asakura, yeah, it sounds right. And one thing about it, you can get the boys together, you can put them in a room. 1 hour later, they will tell you who the leader is. They'll also tell you who the co-captain is. They don't have to touch. They don't have to fight. They don't have to arm wrestle. They don't even have to come near each other. You took a group of dudes, you put them in a room for 1 hour. Everybody would know who's who in that room. And you haven't heard a 125-pounder complain. You cannot give me a name of a 125-pounder who's been in the octagon, who's been through it, who's traveled the road, who's made the towns, who's checked into the hotels, who's got on the scale, who's done the media tour, that has complained and said Asakura doesn't deserve to walk right into this shot. And I know it's been done before, but I'm having a hard time remembering when. I do know that it's been done. I can even see a guy in my head that did it. I'm thinking my own teammate, Dan Henderson, when he came over from Pride, I'm thinking he might have even gone right in against Rampage or right in against Anderson for a title. So I know that it's been done before. I know Anderson came over and he only had one fight against Chris Lee and went right into Rich Franklin, but that's still one fight. That's still one removed, right? It's not quite the same as debuting in a world title. Debuting in the fight capital of the world. Literally the very place that legally coined the term mixed martial arts. The very place that came up with the original and initial set of unified rules. It's a lot to walk into. And it's also a lot to have world champions stand down. Now, there's a policy. If there's one world title on the line, the world title goes last. The world title always goes last. The world title is always the main event. The only time you got to go read the asterisks is if there's two. Or if there's three. But the world title always goes last. I will share for you, for a gentleman who's debuting and never done this, to walk out after world champions like Chris Weidman, who will be in the Hall of Fame. World champions and reigning top contenders like Aljo Sterling. Just for example, for everybody to stand back and let a guy debuting make that walk second to last. It's a very interesting thing. And some of it is done out of respect, and some of it is because there's a policy and it happens to be a title fight. The point that I'm really trying to make for you is Asakura can fight. Now, not very many people have ever debuted in a world title fight and or main event. And not very many people have ever debuted in the UFC and look great on day one. That's a rare thing. Like a Justin Gaethje type entrance is a rare thing. Randy Couture could play on day one to the extent that they gave him his moniker of the natural. He was a natural. There's not a lot of guys like that. And the reason that experience is helpful is only for one thing, and it may not be what you think of, but the reason is you can stay calm, and the reason staying calm is important is because it's a game of cardio. If I'm tougher than you or you're tougher than me, what are we really talking about? We both mustered up the courage to get in there, whether we wanted to do it or not, so it's a wash. Throw it out. Me tougher than you or you tougher than me means one thing. Can you go hard longer than I can, which comes down to who's in the best shape? Mixed martial arts and these tough guys and the missing teeth and the little tattoos that you think are really tough guys, they're just in better shape than you are. I mean, if you really wanted to boil it down, they can do that over 3 rounds and they can do it over 5 rounds. You got all sorts of ways to do it. We go put them on a track and field and just have them do sprints back and forth till one of them says I'm done. Like the unified rules is just a way of getting that energy out. It is nothing more than a contest of who is in better shape than who. And regardless of what your cardio level is, you're a human being and things can affect it, such as chemicals like adrenaline. Very true. When you talk about who's got the pressure on them, the reason that matters is it creates a fatigue, and that fatigue can create an exhaustion. And when Asakura has never done something like this before, and he's also going in against Pantoja, who has quite possibly the best pace in the UFC. Pantoja's secret sauce is not his team, it's not his training, His secret sauce is his ability to out-scramble everybody he's ever fought, and he can out-scramble them for one reason. He's in better shape than them. And a lot of that is DNA. I would suspect if you went and did a blood count on him, he's got very high H&H. I wouldn't be surprised if you did an x-ray that he's got an extra large lung. Truly. But Asakura is a very interesting guy, and no fellow fighter, including world champions, has complained about this placement. Nobody ranked within the top 10 has complained about his placement. I mean, you're telling me that we can't get Bo Nickel and Chimaev together. We can't do it because they're too far in the rankings. Asakura isn't in the rankings. And I think more than anything, I would just like this point to be made, right? As soon as there's a precedence, we can now do it. We look at the rankings committee and we laugh. We don't take these guys serious. The reason I don't do interviews and bring guys from the rankings committee on here is you don't respect them. But we don't respect them either. They don't know what they're doing. It's been suggested they be replaced with AI, and I predict that they will, but I still want to bring the same thing to you. The reason you're telling me we can't get fights that we want to see is because they're too far in the rankings. Asakura is not ranked. And it does come back to the original point that I made to you 7 minutes and 17 seconds ago, which is you get the boys together in a room for an hour, they all know who's who, and nobody's complaining. That the unranked guy who happens to be debuting in the fight capital of the world on pay-per-view in the main event for the belt, nobody's complaining about that. Asakura is a very tough guy. He's a very dangerous guy. But you don't need to go and look and see if he knows the rubber guard or if he can hit a spinning Superman punch. You don't have to do any of those things. You just have to find out, in a normal environment, is he in better shape than Pantoja, who might be the best conditioned athlete the sport has? That's it. When you figure that out, put your bet for it, because that's the guy that's going to win. George Masvidal claims he is returning and he's going to make that return fight in Miami. Now, I have to use that word. I also believe that George Masvidal is returning. So I also would believe that Miami makes a level of sense. But it is very unusual. It would be a massive sign of respect if George Masvidal was able to get a contract done. For a variety of reasons. Being on a four-loss skid, for one, that's tough for anybody. To retire to come back. Generally, if you retire off a loss, there is no comeback. Now, those are broad strokes. Would depend on the kind of fight. But moreover, is 40 years old. The UFC is just not signing that type of an athlete. They're just not. So there would be the few strikes, and I would have a hard time believing that George is coming back. Now, I must share, regardless of an ongoing spat I have with George, I would like if he came back. That would be good news. And I did look into this to a degree, wasn't the highest level information, but said that George was, in fact, coming back. I was told that about 2 months ago, that he was in the pool, going through the process, was on the backside of the boxing event where they got rug pulled, that George would be coming back. But at the same time, that is very difficult information to just accept with on its face. It happened to come out side by side with an announcement the UFC had made about Leon. And I had spoke to you guys over here last week and just said, hey, where's Leon? Leon appears to be the forgotten welterweight. Haven't seen anything regarding Leon, and somebody spoke to that and said, as a matter of fact, they're going back to England. It's early 2025. It will be a fight night, and it will be headlined by Leon. Now, was all the information we had? There was no opponent. All right, great. But I want you to understand this from my perspective. I get this two pieces of news back to back. So they're both lingering fight announcements. They both have an attachment to a card with an athlete that has an attachment geographically to the venue. But one was put out by the UFC. One was an official announcement by the UFC. And one was put out by George Masvidal. And then overarching, of course, my first thought is, if Leon is back and without an opponent, and if Masvidal is back and without an opponent, it would seem like we just solved each other's problems. Now, per the press releases, again, one put out by the company, one put out by George, it had a lot to do with the same rhyme and reason, which was England, Leon, Miami, Masvidal. So I get where you'd have a problem maybe getting those guys together, but I don't think we can scratch our heads and play along that George Masvidal coming back is for anything other than fun. And that's not a put down, by the way. George Masvidal is fun. He will get a pop. He will get a reaction from the crowd. He will not draw in off of four losses. He will not draw in to a star. He will not draw in to a top 10 guy. He is not likely to draw in to a five-round fight, though that is certainly possible. And the point I'm attempting to make for you, George could be brought in. That's true. And he will have a job, which is to shine up a lesser known talent. And there are some really good fighters that are lesser known that are just waiting for one of these guys with a big name to come and play with them. But it is very hard to imagine a scenario with George Masvidal where he would get a win. Right? I mean, you just don't get better at something by not doing it. Not only did George retire, the guys that beat George retired. It's one of those situations where that era is just done. So if you're going to come back, it's only for one reason. You build a relationship over there. You build a relationship. People like working with you. You're still going to be in there with a hammer who you're very unlikely to beat. And I tell the story that way. I tell the story that way, not actually because of George and I's thing. It's not actually because of that. The UFC only puts on significant fights. That's it. Every fight has a significance. There's a meaning. A victory here takes you here, for example. And if it is very unlikely that George is going to win, when we already have the deck wildly stacked against him, the age of 40, four losses in a row, and I'm even throwing out a boxing match. Guys who beat him are done with the sport and will never get a fight again, but he does. I'm just sharing with you. It's wildly difficult to believe that if he were to lose, that he would get yet another fight. And it would just seem there's only one fight that people want to see him have, which is Leon. And if George's announcement is accurate, right? I've got to make that leap there. George has the right to play the game and try to get himself in a position. The story that George is asking us to believe is that he's booked in Miami because Miami is the most important part, when generally the opponent would be the most important part. That's the part of this that does make me believe that George is going into business for himself, but there's a great way to manifest and manipulate in this sport. And if George is doing that, fair play. It would just seem, right? And I can't really get around that. I was in Miami. It was called 299. Two guys, neither of which for Miami, headlined a $14+ million gate that was completely sold out. Like, we don't need George for Miami. I don't know if that's true with Leon. I think Leon being at home is more likely a very good thing. And there's no fight that anybody would rather see. There's not a fight of consequence to this degree. And if it is likely to be a one and done, it would seem like if you're doing a fight for fun, then by God, let's have some fun. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a reminder that if you would like to support this program, and I think you should, then I suggest you leave a review for the program on Apple Podcasts or submit a rating over at Spotify. I'm going to be back for more on Friday, everybody. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.